Okay, so next week you will have a quiz. It'll be the third quiz. And it's going to be over all that was on your test or your last quiz, quiz number two. And then we'll also be on Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. And so,
Judges and Ruth.
Yep, so that will be the new material that will be on the quiz. And so if you look at the book of Joshua there for the overview, you'll want to know who wrote the book of Joshua. And you'll want to know one of the themes of Joshua. So one of the four is fine. You'll want to know number four. Under general thoughts and overview of Joshua, you'll want to know number four. The Hebrew name Joshua is the same name of Jesus in Greek. They both mean Jehovah saves. You'll want to know what that means, what Joshua means.
Jehovah saves, yeah.
Okay. Next page, number eight. Joshua is a great example of the result of effective discipleship. So you'll want to know that statement. Number 10, Joshua's greatest failure is not preparing a leader to follow him and lead the people after his death. So I'll ask you what Joshua's greatest failure was.
You know, number 8, including the four...
No, just the first line.
Just the first line,
yeah. Yeah, just the very first line of 8 is what I'll be looking for.
Okay.
Number 17, you'll want to know.
What is that?
The New Testament makes it clear that Joshua is a type of Christ.
It's a type of Christ, yeah.
So that would be your fill-in. So I'll be asking you, what does the New Testament make it, or what does the New Testament say Joshua is, you know? So you'll want to go down to number 21.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, you weren't here for that week, so it's going to be sacred prostitution by both sexes is the fill-in. Serpent worship and infant sacrifices.
Both sexes. Sacred worship.
Serpent.
Serpent.
Yep. And infant sacrifices. So you want to know what they were doing.
Advent, is it?
Huh?
Advent, is it? Advent.
Infant, infant, baby.
Infant sacrifices, yeah.
Yep. And then 23.
Which include?
Sacred prostitution by both sexes. Serpent worship.
There's a blank there in before prostitution.
Sacred.
Sacred.
Yes.
Prostitution, is it?
Sacred prostitution by both sexes, yep.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Now jump down to 23.
Yeah.
General Douglas MacArthur said, "In war, there is no substitute for victory." So your fill-ins are war and substitute. So I'll probably ask him what the quote for that.
Yeah, substitute.
Then, yes, yep. So war and substitute. And then in number 24. Says we see that the secret of Joshua's victories was not his skill with the sword, but his submission to the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your two fill-ins, is skill and submission. So I'm probably looking for that too. You'll want to know one of the themes, one of the two themes. And then you'll want to know number 15, what the word judge means. And that one is, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So that's your fill-ins, that one. So those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next page over, you'll see the outline of the events of the book of Judges. Now, there's 13 different judges, and I'll be asking you to name 3 of them. Name three of the 13 judges. So from Roman numeral 2, the first series of judges, letter A, all the way down to Samson.
F.
So those are all judges.
Okay.
So just know 3 of those names.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the book of Ruth. And I'll ask one of the themes of Ruth. One of the three that are there.
Okay.
Then on the next page, number 14.
Okay.
Then 15B. And okay. Then 18A, number 19 and 20.
19 and 20.
And that's it. So that's all the new stuff that will be on the quiz.
Okay. Thanks.
Again, look over your notes because I might throw up some bonus questions that I might take from some of the other notes. But those will be the main things on the quiz. And so there might be some extra stuff that's in there for a bonus. So you never know. But the stuff that was the bonus on the last quiz will not be there on this quiz. So it'll be new bonus questions. It won't be the same ones.
Okay.
So, all right, let's go ahead and get to 1 Samuel then. Okay. You've got that page, correct?
I have it, yeah.
Okay. All right, so the author of 1 Samuel is unknown. But it's possibly Samuel, David, or one of the priests. So it's either Samuel, David, or one of the priests. Now, some of the key chapters. Chapter 1, we see the birth of Samuel. Chapter 8, we see Israel demands a king. Chapter 10, we see Saul anointed as the first king of Israel. And then in chapters 15, we see Saul rejected as the king of Israel. Chapter 16, we see David chosen as the next king. And then the most famous chapter probably of 1 Samuel is David and Goliath. And that great showdown. A couple key verses. The first one is chapters 8, verses 7 through 22. Where Israel demands a king. And again, this is not new to God. God knew that Israel was going to want a king even back in the days of Moses when Moses wrote in Deuteronomy. But here, Israel demands a king to be just like the other nations. They don't like being separate. They don't like being peculiar. They want to be just like the world around them. And so that's why they demand this king. And then also in chapters 15, verses 22 and 23, we see Saul is rejected as the king of Israel because of his disobedience against the Agagites and killing King Agag. And so because he would not obey God, God gave this throne to David. Now there's two main themes of 1 Samuel. The first one is leading God's people. So leading, L-E-A-D-I-N-G. So leading God's people, which is what a king is supposed to do. So leading. And then the second one is biblical principles in leadership. Biblical principles in leadership. And now there's several key people. I could have listed a whole bunch of people because they're very important. But some that I have listed here is Hannah, Samuel, Saul, Eli, Michal, Jonathan, Goliath, Abigail, David, Abner, and I can go on and on and on. Key places, Shiloh, where the tabernacle was at, Mizpah, Bethlehem, Gibeah, and then several scattered places throughout Judah. As Saul is chasing after David. The date of writing is about 1000 BC. So you're filling there is 1000. About 1000 BC.
Okay.
General thoughts and overview of 1 Samuel. We'll go ahead and go on to that next section. And these four books are a continuation of the history books of the Bible. So they're just a continuation of the history that we've already been learning. The events of 1 Samuel span approximately 100 years from about 1100 BC to about 1000 BC and describe the lives of Samuel, Saul, and young David. The events of 2 Samuel cover another 40 years. Now the author is anonymous. Now we know that Samuel wrote a book, as was is said in 1 Samuel 10:25, but it is very possible that he wrote part of this book as well. Now we don't know, but other possible contributors to 1 Samuel are the prophets or historians that are Nathan and Gad, which we see in 1 Chronicles 29:29. And originally, the books of 1 and 2 Samuel were just one book. So in the Hebrew Bible, they don't have 1 and 2 Samuel. They just have the books of Samuel. And so, but we in our English Bible, we've separated them because 2 Samuel is basically solely on the reign of King David. And go ahead.
Sorry, I thought Samuel wrote this book because it's in on his, it's his name,
Yeah, it's very possible, but a lot of the beginning parts deal with him, and so it is possible that is the reason why it's called that. We just don't know. Yeah. There's no definitive, definitive markings of why it's called 1 Samuel, but it's because Samuel had such great influence over the beginning part of the monarchy that. He anointed both David and Saul to be the kings.
Yeah.
So he was very instrumental in the monarchy. So that might be one of the reasons why they also call it Samuel. And what page is that on yours? Is there a page on it, or is there no? I don't think there is.
What
on your page?
One? For 7.
Yeah, is there a page number on it?
47.
Yeah. Okay. Romeo, we're on page 47. 1 Samuel. Yep, 1 Samuel notes. So we're on page 47. All right, so let's go back to number 4, the purpose of this book. 1 Samuel records the history of Israel in the land of Canaan as they move from the rule of judges to being a unified nation under kings. So your two fill-ins there is judges and kings. Judges and kings. The prophet Samuel emerges as the last judge, and he anoints the first two kings of Israel, which are Saul and David. That's your two fill-ins there, Saul and David. Now, 1 Samuel can be neatly divided into two sections, which is the life of Samuel, which is chapters 1 through 12, and the life of Saul, which is chapters 13 through 31. So your two fill-ins there, and number 5 is Samuel and Saul. The book starts with the miraculous book of Samuel in answer to his mother's earnest prayer. As a child, Samuel lived and served in the temple. God singled him out as a prophet, and the child's first prophecy was one of judgment on the corrupt priests that were Eli's sons. The Israelites go to war with their enemies, the Philistines. The Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant. But when the Lord sends judgment upon them, the Philistines return the ark. Samuel calls Israel to repentance and then to victory over the Philistines. So your fill in there, number 7, is Philistines. So Philistines. Philistines. Mm-hmm. Now number 8, the people of Israel, wanting to be like other nations, desire a king. Samuel is displeased by their demands, but the Lord tells him that it's not Samuel's leadership that they're rejecting, but his own. In other words, they're rejecting God's leadership. They wanted a man over them, not God. And after warning the people of what having a king would mean, Samuel anoints a Benjamite named Saul, who is crowned in Mizpah. Number 9, Saul enjoys initial success, defeating the Ammonites in battle. But then he makes a series of errors in judgment. Now, Saul started off a great king. He really did. He had no pride in his life. But as years went on, Saul changed. And he became more proud. Desiring the appeal of men rather than serving God. And so sadly, you see that transformation of Saul, who comes from following God with a desire to really killing even the priest of God, you know, just such a far way to go. So we're going to look here at some of the mistakes that he made. Letter A, he presumptuously offers a sacrifice. He presumptuously offers a sacrifice. So 9A is sacrifice. Fill in there. On your next page, letter B, he makes a foolish vow at the expense of his son Jonathan in chapters 14. And then lastly, he disobeys the Lord's direct command to annihilate the Amalekites in chapters 15. Now again, he does make some other serious mistakes after this, but these are the three main ones that really show his he wasn't walking with God and made some foolish decisions. Number 10, we see as a result of Saul's rebellion, God chooses another man to take Saul's place as king. When God removes his blessing from Saul, an evil spirit drives Saul towards madness. After that, Samuel travels to the little village of Bethlehem. So you're filling there is Bethlehem, number 11. Bethlehem. To anoint a young man named David as the next king of Israel. Later, David has his famous confrontation with Goliath, the Philistine, and becomes a national hero. So your two fill-ins there for number 11 is Bethlehem and Goliath.
Goliath, with the Goliath. Right?
Yes, Goliath, the big giant. Number 12, David serves in Saul's court after becomes this national hero. And he ends up marrying Saul's daughter and is befriended by Saul's son, Jonathan. Now, Saul himself grows jealous of David's success and popularity, and he attempts to kill David several times. But David flees, and he eventually flees and says, look, he tells Jonathan, look, your dad's going to kill me. He wants to murder me. He hates me. He's angry with me. And so David ends up going on the run and has to leave his wife behind in order to escape with his life. And so when he flees, it begins an extraordinary period of adventure, intrigue, and romance while running for his life from King Saul. I mean, you look at Robin Hood and all that kind of stuff and the adventures that he had with his band of merry men, and you kind of wonder sometimes, you know, here we see the life of David. Here he is. He's going from place to place. These men start following him up to 400 at one time and then 600. And, you know, as they're trying to escape from Saul, and yet they're still attacking the enemies of Israel and still doing some great things. And it's interesting, you know, and he's creating these mighty men, these soldiers that are so powerful and strong and very good in battle. And it's just, you could probably write books upon books of just his adventures, you know, and things that he experienced, you know. And so during this time that he's running, all these things are happening. Number 14, with supernatural aid, David narrowly but consistently eludes the bloodthirsty Saul. And through it all, David maintains his integrity and his friendship with Jonathan. So you're filling there is Jonathan. Now, Jonathan's supposed to be the rightful king of Israel because of succession. You know, once his dad dies, he should be the king. But Jonathan knows that David is God's anointed, that God has chosen David to be king over him. And rather than have hostility towards David, Jonathan actually says, look, you know, I know this is what God's will is. And he actually befriends David, and he loves David almost, you know, as much as a brother. And David loves him just as much. And it's one of the greatest friendships in the Bible. And even throughout all the time that his father is trying to kill him, he doesn't abandon that friendship. You know, even though if David were to die, Jonathan would become the next king. But Jonathan never raises his hand against David. And so it's a great, great relationship to see that between these two men. Now, number 15, near the end of the book, Samuel dies, and Saul is a lost man. On the eve of a battle with the Philistines, Saul seeks for direction. And having rejected God, he finds no help from heaven, and he seeks counsel from a witch instead. During the seance, Samuel's soul rises from the dead to give one last prophecy, that Saul would die in battle the next day. So your villain there is Samuel. Samuel's soul. The prophecy is fulfilled. Saul and his three sons, including Jonathan, die in the battle, and Saul ends up committing suicide. Now, some practical applications to this, to the book of 1 Samuel. First of all, letter A, the tragic story of Saul is a study in wasted opportunity. Here was a man who had it all. He had honor from God and man. He had authority. He had riches. He had good looks and more. Yet he died in despair, terrified of his enemies and knowing that he had failed his nation, his family, and his God. That's why he ends up committing suicide. Saul made the mistake of thinking disobedience didn't matter. Like many today, he believed that a sensible motive will compensate for bad behavior. Perhaps his power went to his head and he began to think that he was above the rules. Somehow he developed a low opinion of God's commands and a high opinion of himself. Even when confronted with his wrongdoing, he attempted to justify himself, and that is when God rejected him. Now, letter C, Saul's problem is one we all face, a problem of the heart.
Heart.
Saul had a very prideful heart. Obedience to God's will is necessary for success. And if we, in pride, rebel against him, we set ourselves up for loss. David, on the other hand, did not seem like much at first. Even Samuel was tempted to overlook him when he was comparing David with the rest of his brothers. But God sees the heart and saw in David a man who would follow after his own heart. And the humility and integrity of David, coupled with his boldness for the Lord and his commitment to prayer, sets a good example for all of us. Now, number 17, the books of Samuel embrace that critical period of Israel's history from judgeship to monarchy, from loose tribal affiliation to strong central government. So your fill-in there is tribal, T-R-I-B-A-L, tribal. They go from a tribe, you know, and the loyalties to the tribes to a strong central government. Number 18, the books of Samuel provide an account of the history of Israel from the end of the 12th through the beginning of the 10th centuries before Christ. The entire period covered is about 150 years. So that's your fill in there is 150.
150.
Yes. 1 Samuel reads as a work deeply sensitive to the uses and abuses of human power and to the abiding ineluctability, which can't be eluded overthrow, of divine election. So your fill in there is uses and abuses.
Uses and abuses.
Yes. Number 20. 1 and 2 Samuel are named after the prophet Samuel, who served as the last judge and who anointed both Saul and David to be kings of Israel. So your fill in there is last.
As the last of the list.
Yeah, he's last of the judges.
The last judge.
Number 21, viewed together, the books of 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings cover the entire period of the monarchy and its commencement to its collapse in 586 BC. Now let's go ahead and go to the next page. Number 22, Samuel had the tremendous task of directing and rebuilding of social and religious unity that was God's instrument for establishing the kingdom of Israel in this great national crisis, second only in importance to the Exodus. So your feelings there are social and religious. Number 23, a nation cannot rise higher than its leadership. So a nation cannot rise higher than its leadership. Followers tend to become what their leaders are. So your feelings there is leadership and become. A nation cannot rise higher than its leadership. Followers tend to become what their leaders are. Number 24, a nation's leader determines its destiny. A nation's leader determines its destiny. Throughout the history of God's people, the leaders determined the spiritual direction of the nation. Number 26, the morals of a nation are determined by the character of its leaders. The morals of a nation are determined by the character of its leaders. I mean, you see that here in our own country now. You know, there is no more respect for the sanctity of life in the womb. There's, you know, no more, you know, now they've allowed the gay marriage and we have a gay Taoiseach, you know, and now we're going to see the morality of our nation is going to go down. It's going to go down into a pit. Really, it is. And so as long as we keep electing leaders who are not good leaders, our nation, the morals of our nation are going to keep on plummeting. Number 27, the morals of a church are determined by the character of the pastors and staff. So the morals of the church are determined by the character of the pastors and staff. Number 28, the morals of a family are determined by the character of the parents. Parents set the morals of their family. It's up to the parents to teach their children from right and wrong. It's up to the parents to discipline their children when they are disobey, when they're wrong. It's up to the parents to be able to lead and to help their children to become and know what is right and wrong. That's their responsibility. Now, number 29. During Judges and Ruth, there was no national leadership, and it was a time of anarchy. So you're feeling there is anarchy. Everybody did what was right in their own eyes. Number 30, great leaders make a nation great, and poor leaders make it wicked. And the absence of leadership always results in anarchy. And lastly, the following books of 1 Samuel through 2 Chronicles need to be viewed theologically and not only as recounting of events separated from the purposes and plan of God. Don't look at these books just as history. They're very important for us to be able to read and to learn some great lessons from. It's not just history. So don't look at it just as history. Look at it as how can this apply to my life today? All right, let's go ahead and go on to a simple outline of 1 Samuel. Now, I'm not going to go through this in depth because I want to get to 2 Samuel tonight. But we see here the birth and early years of Samuel in chapters 1 through 4. We see Hannah's burden, her faith and blessing. We see Eli's family problems, that God speaks with Samuel, and then finally Samuel the prophet. Next, we see Samuel's leadership of Israel. Then we see the abuse of the Ark of the Covenant by the Philistines. So that's your fill in there is Ark of the Covenant.
That's what is it?
Two A. Is Ark of the Covenant. Should be really long blanks. Okay. Then you'll see several things with Saul's leadership there with C, D, E, and F. Then you see Saul and David, chapter 16 through 30. You see David's rise to power, and Samuel anoints him in chapter 16. And number two there, David enters Saul's service as a harp player. So he plays the harp.
H-A-R-P.
Yep, harp.
Music.
Yep, so he plays a harp. And his playing usually calms down Saul. So David then kills Goliath in chapter 17. And Jonathan and David become best friends in chapter 18. Women start to praise David's abilities in battle and causes envy in Saul's heart, which leads to Saul trying to kill David. David continues to succeed regardless. And so Saul tries to figure out a way to kill David so it wouldn't be his fault. And so he has David kill 100 Philistines in order to be able to marry his daughter, Michal. So it's M-I-C-H-A-L. That's how you spell her name, or M-I-C-H-A-L. And so he actually brings back 200 rather than 100. And so he does more and above what Saul asked for. And Saul was hoping that David would get killed. And he actually comes back victorious. After that, you see Saul versus David from 19 to 27. And you see God protects David several times throughout chapters 19 through 21. And you see that David protects his men in chapter 22 through 23. So fill in there is David protects his men. And then lastly, you see Saul's final battle. Saul's final battle. See the woman, Saul and the woman of Endor, the witch there. And we see the Philistines dismiss David from joining the battle. And then while David is away, the Amalekites destroy Ziklag. And David gives chase to the Amalekites and recovers everything. And then lastly, you see Saul and his sons die in the battle against the Philistines. And so that's a brief outline of 1 Samuel. Let's go ahead and get into 2 Samuel tonight. At the top there, now again, the author is unknown. We don't know who the author is. Again, it could have been Samuel, could have been, there's also could have been possibly Nathan or Gad. So your fill in there is Nathan. He was a prophet and a historian, and so it's possible that Nathan was also a part of 2 Samuel. Or in 1 Samuel. No, it was a different. It was a different Nathan. Yep. All right. So, we see in key chapters here, chapter 3, we see the assassination of Abner by Joab. Assassination of Abner by Joab. Chapter 7, we see God's covenant with David that his seed will be established forever, ultimately fulfilled by Jesus Christ. Chapter 12, we see the great sin of David as he lays with Bathsheba and then tries and then has her husband murdered. So you see that great sin. And after that, that was kind of like the pinnacle part of David's life. Before that happened, the first 11 chapters, victories. God or David is living in victory. He's, a lot of great things are happening. But after chapter 12, David's life just plummets. The victories that he had were no longer there. His own house rose up against him. He had problems with his children. So the years after this happened was one of misery and just no victory, really. And it was really, you see that big change in David's life because of his sin. Even though he repented and got right, it still there was consequences for his sin. And he paid for them throughout the rest of his life. Number four there, we also see chapter 22. David writes a great song of praise. It's actually very encouraging. I believe it's also in Psalms. But it's a great song of praise. Now, some key verses in 2 Samuel 3:18, Abner encourages Israel to make David the king. At that time, David was just king over Judah, of his tribe there. And so Abner encouraged the rest of Israel to make David the king, in which they do. Chapter 7, verses 4 through 17, we see the prophecy of Christ being an heir of David. And then lastly, chapter 24, verse 24, you cannot worship God without a cost. You cannot worship God without a cost. Now, there's two main themes of 2 Samuel. The first one is future achievement is never assured. Future achievement is never assured. There's no guarantee unless you walk with the Lord in righteousness. But even then, future achievement is never assured. God directs your steps, yes, when you allow Him to lead and you're yielded to Him. But when you live your own life, live your own way, your future achievement is never assured. Number two, righteousness brings commendation. So C-O-M-M-E-N. D-A-T-I-O-N. So commendation. C-O-M-M-E-N-D-A-T-I-O-N. So righteousness brings commendation. So praise is basically another word for it. And sin brings catastrophe. And that is C-A-T-A-S-T-R-O-P-H-E.
Catastrophe.
Yep.
Commendation is the meaning of
praise.
Or praising.
Yep. So commendation, another word for commendation would be praise, honor, lifting up, you know. That would be same words as commendation. Now, some key people are David, Abner, Joab, Abishai, Nathan, Bathsheba, Mephibosheth, Uriah, Absalom, and Amasa. And again, there's a lot of key people, and just hard to kind of summarize just for a few. There's so many events that happen in 1 and 2 Samuel, it's hard to write down just a few key people. Now, some key places are Hebron, which is where David ruled until they made him king over all Israel. Then he moves his capital to Jerusalem. And then after that, you see different places and various battles throughout 2 Samuel. Now, the date of writing is about 960 BC. Now, it could be, as I said, 1000 to 960 BC, somewhere around those two times. 960. Now, let's go down to the general thoughts and overview of 2 Samuel. The purpose of writing 2 Samuel is the inspired record of King David's reign. And the book of 2 Samuel is broadly divided into two main sections. David's triumphs, again, which is chapters 1 through 10, and David's troubles, chapters 11 through 20. So your two fill-ins there is triumphs and troubles. All right, the last part of the book, chapters 21 through 24, is an appendix which contains further details of David's reign and are not in chronological order. Some of that talks about his mighty men, what he does for the temple, you know, institutes the priests you know, the musicians, things like that, and it's not necessarily chronological. Now, the book begins with David receiving news of the death of Saul and his sons, and he proclaims a time of mourning, of grieving for the loss of Saul and the rest of the children, of his children. Now, soon afterward, David is crowned king over Judah, while Ishbosheth, one of Saul's surviving sons, is crowned king over Israel. We see that in chapter 2. A civil war follows, but Ishbosheth is murdered by some of his servants, and the Israelites ask David to reign over them as well. We see that in chapters 4 through 5. Now David moves the country's capital from Hebron to Jerusalem, and later moves the Ark of the Covenant there as well in anticipation of building a permanent temple there. We see that in chapters 5 through 6. Now, David's plan to build a temple in Jerusalem is vetoed by God, meaning God says, you're not doing it, who then promises David the following things. So David had the desire to build God a temple, but God said because he was a bloody man, meaning he had war, he was a warlike man, had to kill, you know, he's killed several people, that he didn't want David to build it, but instead he wanted his son. And so we see that here, letter A, that David would have a son to rule after him. God promises him these things. He said, even though, David, you're not going to build the temple, this is what's going to happen. That David would have a son to rule after him, that David's son would build the temple, and that the throne occupied by David's lineage would be established forever, and that God would never take his mercy from David's house. So that you're feeling there is never. Now, David leads Israel to victory over many of the enemy nations which surrounded them. He also shows kindness to the family of Jonathan by taking in Mephibosheth, Jonathan's crippled son, and treating him as his own son. It was a great picture of mercy and grace. If you want to know how to spell Mephibosheth, it's up in the Key People, near the end of the Key People. You have the spelling of Mephibosheth. Jonathan's crippled son. Yep, it should be at the end of the Key People there, between Bathsheba and Uriah. Yep, so it'd be one big name of Mephibosheth. Yep, so that's your fill-in there for number 8. Number 9. Sadly, though, David falls. He lusts after a beautiful woman named Bathsheba and commits adultery with her, and then has her husband murdered. And because of their sin, she actually finds out that she's pregnant, and that's the reason why David tries to has her husband Uriah come back, so that way he tries to set up a situation where it would look like Uriah is the father of the baby that that is in Bathsheba's womb, rather than David being the father. But Uriah has more integrity than David, and Uriah would not go home. He would not see his wife, even though he's been on the battlefield for several months and hasn't seen his wife in a very long time, and yet he still would not go down and see her, because, you know, his comrades were still dwelling in tents, and he said, I'm not going to my house when the rest of my fellow soldiers are out on the field. I'm not going to do it. And so he has more integrity than David, and he will not go home. And so because of it, David cannot think of any other way to somehow make this happen. And so he has Uriah killed in the next battle. He tells Joab to have Uriah go to the front lines, and when the battle is raging, to have everybody retreat and basically abandon him to the enemy. And that's what happened, and Uriah and several other men are killed. So it wasn't just Uriah whose lives David cost in this decision that he made. He actually made several women widows that day. And so as soon as the news comes that Uriah is dead, and as soon as the time of mourning is finished for Bathsheba, which is probably about a week or two. He then marries her in hopes that it will look that like the baby is just born premature. That when she actually has the 9 months along, that it would look premature rather than actually, no, he had relations with her before that. And so trying to cover himself up, that was his master plan. But David didn't realize that God saw the whole thing, and he was very displeased with it, and he was going to expose David. And so we look here in number 9. When Nathan the prophet confronts David with his sin, David confesses, and God graciously forgives. David knew that he deserved to die for what he did. Because according to the law of God, an adulterer is to be stoned, is to be killed. And so he knew that he was supposed to be killed for his sin. Yet God has grace upon him and gives him another chance. However, the Lord tells David that trouble would arise from within his own household. So the consequences of his sin, David was still going to have to pay. He was still going to have to deal with the troubles that's going to happen. And that's what number 10 brings, David's troubles from within his own house. First of all, David's firstborn son, Amnon, rapes his half-sister, Tamar. And then in retaliation, Tamar's brother, Absalom, which again is Amnon's half-brother, Absalom kills Amnon. Absalom then flees Jerusalem rather than face his father's anger. When Tamar was raped by Amnon, David did nothing. He did nothing about it. He didn't discipline Amnon. He didn't do anything about it. And so because his father did nothing for justice for Tamar, Absalom took it into his own hands. And so he said, that's why he desired to kill Amnon for what he did to his sister. And so Absalom then fled Jerusalem rather than face his father's anger. Now, after that, several years later, Absalom, he's allowed to come back to Jerusalem, but his father still won't talk to him, still won't meet him. And for 2 years, he won't give an audience to Absalom. And so finally, Absalom eventually leads a revolt against David. And some of David's former associates join the rebellion. David is forced out of Jerusalem, and Absalom sets himself up as king for a short time. Absalom is overthrown, however, and against David's wishes, is killed by David's general, Joab. And David mourns for his fallen son. I think David realizes he could have done something to split from Judah, and David must suppress another uprising in chapter 20. All right, we're going to have to stop there for tonight. We ran out of time. And so we'll pick up in number 12 next week. And so we'll pick up number 12. We'll then finish 2 Samuel. And we'll get into 1 and 2 Kings as well. And so we'll go ahead and end there tonight.